Aaron, what's up, dude?
Yo, Jed, the man. I see Jed, I think about Jedi. Because you have Jedi Master skills on Amazon for business, for agency, and latest development, which we're breaking here live. Or not live, actually. Sorry. The newest development that we're breaking here on the Aaron Cordova Show is the biggest takedown of black hat Amazon guys that have stolen massive amounts of goods and tried to bankrupt companies through their sheer nefarious evil actions like the Sith. You are the Jedi and you're taking down the Sith. So we're going to talk about the story today.
You know, I wasn't going to go with that analogy. That's a better intro than I could have provided. But I will say that like if there was Fast and the Furious semi-trucker edition, this is it. Like we've been living in it for the last several weeks. And I will say like when I think of Fast and the Furious, right? A crazy wild, you always walk away and you're like, I can't believe they had that guy jump off a tank and like catch the girl in midair and like land on a windshield and they walk away, right? The living this story has been that wild. Wow. Like it has been.
Wow.
So I don't know if it's the biggest enforcement action that Amazon's taken recently, but I would say it's
the biggest I've heard
of. It's right up.
It is the biggest I've heard of. And it's not just Amazon, it's going to the authorities. And look, this is a crazy story. We're gonna break it, but first, before we get there, I wanna let you talk about yourself and say where you're at, where you've come from, how did you get into Amazon, how did you start in business? Because people need to know that this is not a story that's made up. I know that. But these people don't know. So let's just talk about how did you get started in business?
Great question. So my story is unique. I probably not all that amazing, but when I got married, I took a 6-month honeymoon and a red 4-hour work week and came back from traveling the world. We did the whole thing for like almost no money. We were broke. My wife had saved a bunch of money. And so we got back and I was like, I want to be an entrepreneur. And I failed a couple of times. And I think in business, you know, this principle is true. Your failures teach you more than your wins. And so some early failures, I tried to start a skinny jeans company. And that
how
failed,
old? When you started this entrepreneurship, you got married at what age? And then when did you start trying to start your first business?
So I got married when I was 25, almost 26. And tried to start my next business the next year. Then I tried to start like a cupcakes business. Like the idea was like 1-800 flowers.
Skinny jeans was first. No, I just want to say like put the age, the time frame, right?
Yeah.
So you started skinny jeans company. So what happened there?
So I started a skinny jeans company and this is how basic we were and how inexperienced. I spent like 3 hours in a dressing room at Nordstrom's measuring actual sizes for all these jeans because I thought that like it didn't occur to me that patterns might exist for this, right? We source like 50 factories, narrow it down to like 7. We get second round samples. I put 6 months of work, so I didn't burn a lot of money, but I burned a lot of time. And it's funny because at the beginning of it, you're like, I want this cool stitching on the pocket. I want these cool rivets and this branding here. And like, I want this cool like denim wash. And then like you get your second round samples back and your feedback to China is like, can the buttonhole, can that like be a hole? Right. And the first time you wire money to a Chinese bank account, it's the most nerve wracking thing. Like, you know, you take like $2,000-$3,000 of your savings. And if this doesn't work out, like you may or may not be eating next week and you wire money to China and you just pray. And it failed for two reasons. One is we weren't willing to place the large enough orders to really get scale. And two, we really, in order to do China right from a textiles business, I think you have to go there. And so, you know, getting on Zoom calls and Skype calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, coordinating, right? They don't speak English. You don't speak Mandarin. And you're trying to explain, like I was literally looking up buttonhole and it wouldn't translate. And I'm like, Google Translate, like Duolingo, like I'm trying to communicate that like the jeans need to close, right? Like they need, and it was just a disaster. Like it was a massive failure.
Wow.
So fast forward to today, like I'm the CEO of Amazon, I'm an Amazon agency. I run Piranha. I founded it 8 years ago. I founded it when my first set of twins were born. So I'm the only guy you're probably ever going to meet that's had two sets of twins. I had 2 5-year-old girls and 2 8-year-old girls.
Wow.
And so we run retail promotions all the time, right? It was a BOGO. It was a buy one, get one free. Obviously, we did IVF and we were both healthy.
Oh, I didn't know. Obviously. I mean, you make it. So you did IVF.
Everyone else gets kids for free, and we had to buy ours. And so everything up to IVF failed, and we were both healthy. We just could never have kids. And when we got to the IVF stage, you know, that you pay per transfer, right? And it's like the cost of a new car. You pay 20, 30 grand to do a transfer, and you can transfer 2 for the price of 1. So it was like we transferred 2, hoping that just 1 would take, and then we went 4 for 4. And I haven't slept in 8 years.
But you only paid for 2 and you got 4. So that's actually like another BOGO.
It was a buy one, get one free. Correct. So yeah. We did 1 egg retrieval, froze them all. And then we didn't pick gender or eye color. There's some crazy things they can do now with genetics. We just said we want the healthiest embryos possible. And they just happened to all be girls. And so we ended up with 4 cute girls. And, they're into gymnastics and coloring, and they all have their own personalities. But we have 2 5-year-olds and 2 8-year-olds, and the younger set actually turns 6 on the day of the eclipse. So on Monday, when the solar eclipse rolls through and everyone's going to be staring at the sun, it will also be their 6th birthday. So they'll be 2. They'll [S2] Wow. [S1] Be 6 and 8, and then in May the older set will turn 9. So.
That's incredible.
I live in a zoo.
That is
or a third grade classroom.
It's amazing. And I have to say, you created from not having any money to be able to have a family, to be able to fund even the IVF. That stuff is not cheap, as you're saying. And you've gone to a transition very quickly, and that you were able to achieve that through your entrepreneurship that you threw yourself into, right? Was that part of what you made you want to go into business and do things?
I mean, like I grew up, I was the oldest of 7 kids. I'm originally from Idaho. My dad was a seminary teacher. And so, you know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. There wasn't, you know, we grew up poor, like, but we didn't know it. Like I grew up with a wood fireplace, and we thought electric heat was a luxury, right? And you would get new clothes once a year in August, right? And you would go to Walmart and you get some Wranglers. And I thought that was normal. Like I didn't understand how brands worked. I didn't understand that maybe on the range of things, like we always had our needs met, right? If there was something that was important. But, you know, I started working from an early age, and I originally worked on a farm bucking hay bales and moving pipe. And I knew that's not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And so I went to college, got a degree in finance with a minor in entrepreneurship. And I think the cool thing about entrepreneurship and the great part about the American story is like individuals like you and I have the ability to like change our circumstances, and not every country or every period of time can you say that. Like you do a tremendous amount of family history, and I've gotten into it and got kind of interested. I'm, you know, from what everything I can tell, I come from a long line of coal miners, sheep herders, and horse thieves. And so I'm the first one in 500 years to like kind of break the poverty cycle, which is kind of cool. But we've been very fortunate, very blessed, and humbled by it. We're getting off the topic of Fast and the Furious semi-truck.
No, listen. But this is the thing. In the Fast and the Furious, the guy who's going in there, he has something to lose, right? So we're talking about you're going in, you know, you've made an amazing life. You've achieved success. You have an Amazon agency that, from what I understand, handles some massive, massive brands. And tell me if I'm wrong, or maybe embellish it or go into the more specifics, but you've had the people that you're managing, you've had multiple 8-figure exits, right? 9-figure exits, and a couple of companies that sold for over $1 billion that you were their principal and sole Amazon connection, selling on Amazon.
Correct. Correct. So we've had 3 dozen client exits.
I don't know anyone else who's done that, by the way. I mean, I don't know. Are you the top? Like, I as far as I don't know anyone else with those kind of stats. So congratulations.
I, I, I don't. I think that's a function of the opportunity to get to work with great, great entrepreneurs, right? And great founding teams. So like we've had 36 clients exit for 10 million or more in the last couple of years. Half of those we went from zero. We've had 9 clients exit for 100 million or more. So 9-figure exit. Half of those we went from zero. We were fortunate enough to work with founders like Jason Karp and the Hugh Kitchen team. They sold the Mondelez for 400 million. We've worked with a number of other major brands that have exited. Bliss just sold, and they were awesome to work with. We loved working with them. And sometimes you come in later on in the process. Other times you're early. One of my favorite projects was I used to manage Amazon for Quest Nutrition, and helped get Quest up to tens of millions of dollars on Amazon. They sold a few years ago for a billion. That founder, Ron Penna, is one of my favorite people I've ever worked with. And I learned a tremendous amount about being in his orbit. So when you're in the orbit of like half billionaires, billionaires, and you're around those types of people and you get the opportunity to learn, I think experiential learning is the best. And so for me, no one taught me Amazon. Like I fell into it by accident. Like I, at one point I was the most unemployed guy in my friend group. So I would go to church and guys wouldn't ask me what I did all day, or like guys stand around. We just talk about work. That's all we know how to talk about. Right. That's the common link. Like, hey man, how's work going? Like, you know, like you talk to attorneys, like, you know, people need suing, like, you know, how's suing, you know, how's litigation, you know, what's new in your world? Talk to a doctor, like, oh, hey, tell me about the cool surgery you did the other day. For me, I was unemployed and so painfully unemployed. The worst place to be with strategy is indecision. And I didn't know what to do. And I think a lot of people hit that point. And I think those lows are something we should be grateful for, because they leave scars and they teach lessons. And I think one of the things from Fast and the Furious is like, you know, it's all about family. That's a terrible impression, right? But I think at Piranha, one of the principles is family comes first. And I think that's come through in what you do, Aaron, is like, I can tell that what everything that you've done in business and been successful has been because you put family first. And while we have been in different, you know, been on, different sides of the ecosystem, we followed a parallel path in that I didn't come from money. I bootstrapped it from the ground up. And then we've been very fortunate to, you know, continue to grow every single year. Fast forward to today, we manage $250 million a year through the platform, right? Truthfully, it's probably a lot higher. Like I probably should update that number. Like it's probably more like $500 million. Because I can tell you it's $250 million, $250 million just with a couple of the brands we manage. But to my knowledge, we're the only Amazon agency that's had a $1 billion client by a $500 million client. And we were on both sides of that transaction this year. To my knowledge, we're the only ones that could say that. And I can't say the brand names, but if you hit our website, you can see the brand names. But I can say that, like, you know, they're household names that, you know, everybody.
But what do you mean on both sides of the transaction? So you have like a big company have you as an agency, and then a smaller company have you as an agency, and they're both, you're managing both their Amazons, and then one of them buys the other one.
There you go. So like, so we manage Amazon.
Did you get a commission on that one? Hey, check out this company.
No. But we did get some fantastic friendships out of it. And we did financially benefit just from being, they were kind enough to keep us on post close. And I will say that like, we've had 3 client exits for $1 billion or more. One of them was this brand they sold last year to Dr. Pepper Snapple Group for $2.4 billion. Wow. And you know, they're the smartest guys in the room, right? And so to have the privilege to work with them, and then to work with the other guys who are part of that transaction, that merger, they're also the smartest guys in the room. And so the opportunity to work around really smart and successful people, I think, brings it up. I think you're a function of the 6 people you probably associate with the most. And you know, I like working with people that are smarter than me. And that's not hard, but we've found some great clients and some great entrepreneurs, and we've learned, you know, it's been a lot of fun. Like we're just still having fun, truthfully.
That's amazing. And so, but you stumbled upon Amazon though. Yeah, go ahead.
I did. So I just needed a job, and a kind friend at a church said, hey, just come work for one of my portfolios companies. So I actually started out selling eyewear on Amazon. And it was gaming eyewear, and it was really boring. but it was kind of a cool little niche. It's super niche-y, right? Like eyewear for gamers is not really like, it's not a household thing.
I didn't know it existed, was, to be honest.
And this was 10 years ago. So if you didn't know it exists now, like think back 10 years ago. But in less than 2 years, the Amazon, like my boss left 4 months in and I was hired to do sales. And they just said, you're going to do online sales too. And kind of that startup, wear a lot of hats kind of way. And the first time I made a few clicks on a Friday and came in Monday to 150 grand in POs, like I was hooked. Like I thought that was so cool. Like that I could just make some clicks, you know, run some campaigns. And this is back when bid levels were 5 cents, 10 cents, 20 cent bid levels, right? Like those days are gone. And the business grew. Like I think it went
when you say in POs, like when you say 150 in POs, does that mean that's a vendor central and there was like POs?
Vendor central.
Okay.
It's a vendor central. So I started with a small brand that was on vendor central. Then I went to a small brand on seller central. Then I went to big brands on both vendor and seller. And then my last stop was an Amazon agency. And I remember coming home one day and I told my wife, like we had just had the first set of twins, built our first house, blew all our money on a down payment. And I was like, honey, this is it. Like, this is what I want to do the rest of my life. Like, I freaking love this. Like, it's just so fun and competitive. And shortly after that, I got fired. So that sucked.
From the Amazon agency.
Yes, they voted me off the island. Like I wasn't cool enough. So I would have made them a lot of money. They had a selling account and they didn't like the agency model. So I was bringing on a lot of agency type business and they wanted to protect their seller account. And so I would say they were maybe a little paranoid that like bringing on all these brands would risk their $10 million seller account going down. So they're primarily like a wholesale or reseller. And they had like a success.
That sounds like a very low IQ move. Too much business, slow down. Too much business, again, oh no.
I'm grateful for it because they said, hey, we're going to strategically, they said, we're going to spin this off into a separate unit and you're going to work for a guy based out of Colorado. And by the way, you need to move to Denver. And it was an old newspaper executive. And I looked at him and I was like, I think I could be CEO. Like I brought all these brands on, right? Like I know what I'm doing. I talked to my wife and said, hey, like I'm going to give it a run. I think one of the reasons you've been successful is probably who you chose for a life partner. And same for me, like Mickey is a co-founder at Piranha. And for a while she was the sugar mama. Like I don't give her enough credit for why we are here. Like it has been a team effort and she has been the brains behind the operation. Truthfully, you have a chief strategy officer, that person who like on a Saturday night at 11 o'clock and you're still grinding away comes and just closes your laptop and is like, just go to bed. Nobody dies if chocolate goes out of stock on Amazon, right? Like it's just protein powder. They're just supplements, right? Like they're just widgets. Like at the end of the day, we just sell widgets on Amazon. Like you're the milk frother king of Amazon. And you're someone who I respect, who has incredible integrity. And I know that, and I would say that even if I wasn't on your show. But you know, there's a combination of half Boy Scout, half ninja. And I think you strike a fantastic balance at being aggressive and successful in business, but also being living proof that like you don't have to trade more, you don't have to make moral compromises or break the rules. Like one of the keys to success with big brands on Amazon is being 100% white hat compliant, right? Like Amazon says, we don't like it. You say, okay, no problem. You don't buy reviews. Instinct. You don't do. Yeah. Like you just follow the system. And while gray and black hat actors might get a short-term advantage, like you'll win in the long-term and you'll sleep better at night too, if you're being compliant. And that's part of what uncovering this was all about was, these guys just, you know, they picked the wrong brand to take product from.
Let's frame it a little bit. So you're representing a brand on Amazon, okay? And yes. You work mostly with food companies or no, like consumable goods? Is that like your niche?
We're really deep in groceries, sports nutrition, pet and beauty. So I can't tell you the name of the brand to protect confidentiality. No, what I can tell you, it was in the grocery category. And it was a powder. So it was a consumable powder in the grocery category, but I can't tell you.
No, don't go into it. But you have a massive brand that's doing tens of millions, at least on Amazon. They're huge, and there's a bust. There is a secret operation going on that's going to steal millions of dollars of goods. Okay, over $1 million of goods in a single day, in a single snap. How does that happen?
It was closer to 4 million in two truckloads. So the way that it happened was these goods were destined for a major retailer. I can't name that retailer, but think of the top three biggest retailers, brick and mortar guys, and it's one of those. And this inventory was destined for that location. The short answer is a truck showed up to move the goods and they never arrived at their final destination. And when the brand went back to double check, nobody checked. You know, there were some breakdowns and some security protocols along the way, but basically, just a truck showed up and drove off with the with two containers of product. So you have $4 million worth of inventory. December, things are busy, right? There's a lot of turnover, right? Trucks are going in and out. There's a lot of pressure. So you know these opportunistic individuals took advantage of that. And obviously the brand filed, you have business insurance for a reason, right? And things like that. But this inventory disappeared. It was stolen and nobody knew what happened to it. And then fast forward
and
to
so,
a few weeks
and
ago.
And so explain, you're talking like you have a 3PL, you have some sort of warehouse, right? And it's happened to me, by the way, just so you know, I've been a part of this.
No.
This has happened to me, not at that scale, but let me say from ours, and I need to just preface this because this is my understanding and I want you to then add to it. Someone came, we were selling masks, okay, during COVID. I was part of a deal, a friend's like, hey, let's sell some masks, this. I had a warehouse, hey, bring in the stuff. It was a truckload of masks, 3-ply masks, okay? And the guy came in from the FedEx or whatever.
Is this back when N95s were like gold and you couldn't get your hands on them?
Oh yeah. This is that time period. And I go, sure, let's just fly some stuff in. It was, you know, from, I think it was even India. It wasn't China. It was like India mask something. Boom. Okay. We made the sale. The guy comes from FedEx, I think it was. Or we believe it's from FedEx. He scans all of the boxes and off he goes. When we go and check with FedEx, they were never scanned. Okay. And we lost, I want to say, maybe like 120 grand or something like that of product, not 4 million. But what blew my mind was that the scanner, you would think you scan and it sends it. No, they batch send. So they scan all of it and then they have to say send to like the HQ, right? It's two steps. No, so we thought since it was scanned, it was all good, but it's not all good. They never sent it. FedEx said, no, the driver never arrived. We never scanned anything. They never refunded us. The insurance, nothing covered it. That money was gone. It came out of my pocket, which is fine. Whatever it was, I forgot the exact number, but somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aaron, I don't know about you, but 120 grand still hurts. It's still painful.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, it was terrible, right? Like it was a disaster. Then I replaced it. It was a total disaster and I was pissed about it. I mean, for months, I was like, I can't believe it. Security cameras, this, what the hell? Why don't we have, like, you get pissed, right? But what happens is that FedEx didn't take responsibility for it, so I did it. Anyway, I'm just saying, in my case, it was for my own warehouse. Someone came, pretended, or actually worked at FedEx or UPS. I think it was FedEx. Scanned it, didn't scan it, and then walked away. And then really, we have no record, and that money was gone. So it was something similar of that nature. Someone arrives, they signed some paper, they used a fake name, something like, can you walk it through like the details of exactly?
Yeah, I mean the, I will say like, what I will say, cause I want to leave some identifying information out, right? To protect, you know, not only my family, but protect my client and then protect some of the facts. But I will say the interesting thing is that they used a made up name of a carrier. So if you look at the bill of lading, like they literally put like the word Phantom in there. Like it seems obvious now in retrospect that maybe that's not a real name of a carrier.
But the Ghost Disappearing LLC, right? That one.
Yes, yes. Literally, they like. I don't think carriers are known for their branding, right? Yeah. No offense to all the carriers out there, and so you know, just a made up name was put on the line for the carrier. They hooked up the trucks and off they went. And I think when we got really deep into it, like there were a number of individuals who were of Mexican descent connected to this, right? And so one of the questions we've had is perhaps was there a language barrier? Because when we connected the stolen goods on the other end, or potentially, I'll say the goods of questionable origin, right? We know it's stolen inventory. We don't know how it got.
Yeah, the person who ends up selling it, we don't know if they were part of it or they were sold in bulk, right? Who knows?
We don't know all the steps in between. What we can say with definitive certainty is that this inventory was stolen. It came from these two truckloads, right? And yep. and what happened was is so let's say like you have a normal product, and let's say it's a 30 serving product, right? Well, in this retail exclusive, we were selling an off count, call it like a 46 count. Mm-hmm. Of that, and they started selling like the 46 count inventory on the same listing as like the normal 30 count listing.
Yeah, and it was inventory created specifically to never be on Amazon, right? That's supposed to be, yeah, which we do that.
Correct. It's a retail exclusive. It should only be in that massive retailer. And so we looked at it and we're like, hey, like the alarming thing was they were selling our, you know, on a Friday night, our buy box gets hijacked and they're selling it below cost on the 30 count. So, you know, we're freaking out. The brand is alarmed. Like, you know, when your buy box gets hijacked, if it just goes down 5 cents, a nickel, quarter, 50 cents, a dollar, okay, let's deal with it, right? It could potentially be gray market diversion. Sure. When your buy box gets hijacked and you lose the buy box to a guy and that price point isn't available anywhere, right? Like it's impossible for it to be an authorized sure. or legitimate.
Yeah, and it's not one unit. It's thousands of units. That's the thing too. One person can say, let me offload it. I bought it at a store. Who cares?
In a weekend, they move thousands of units. And we're talking about, probably expensive similar to product. Your incident. Between $50,000 and $150,000 is the range I'll give. So, you know, in a weekend, these guys move between $50,000 and $150,000 in product of a questionable origin. And we look at the selling address is public, right? For every reseller. Yep. Well, it wasn't somebody on the Piranha team, but there was an individual who saw that and said, oh, that's not too far away from where I am. I'm going to go drive by. This is before we uncovered the extent of this operation, the character of those involved, the fact that some of these individuals had done prison time or been convicted of terrible things. Maybe they're guilty this time, maybe not. I mean, I'm a fan of innocent until proven guilty. We'll let law enforcement do its thing. And there's mm-hmm. an active investigation that I can't comment on. But what I can say is, you know, this individual walked through their warehouse and took pictures, right? Mm-hmm. And so part of what we provided to Amazon was the proof of where this inventory was shipping from. And you're talking about a normal individual like Aaron, if you buy millions of dollars worth of inventory that should be temperature controlled in the grocery category, right? You're not going to put it outside in a junkyard where like rats or the elements can damage the mm-hmm. inventory, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like it should not, like you're not going to just throw tens of millions of dollars under a tarp and call it a day outside. You're going to get another warehouse, temperature controlled, do it the right way. So this facility, there was, you know, just stacks of pallets, an incredibly random assortment. And those in and of itself are fairly innocuous, right? The crazy thing is, bingo, we locate the inventory that was a retailer exclusive that was stolen months before, potentially stolen, and we located.
I mean, for sure stolen. Like,
it's for for legal reasons. I have to say potentially sure. stolen, but yes. So we locate it, and you know, I think like one of the crazy things is I was amazed at how fast Amazon took action. Like we contacted local law enforcement, we contacted Amazon. I've done Amazon for 10 years. You've done Amazon for along. I would say like we're probably nine, yeah. I would say like we're OGs. Like no offense, like we're probably old dogs at this point. Sure. Like if you have a dad bod and you're selling on Amazon, there's only a few of us left, I guess. I don't know. And I'm going to speak for myself. I need to work out more. But we put all this information together. We had verification orders, right, proving that they were selling an item that was different than what was the listing was. We provided it to Amazon. I was shocked at how fast Amazon took action. But several highly unusual things happened. Like Amazon, we filed a claim through Brand Registry. Hey, they're selling something different than what was actually like on the listing, right? Like the listing is a 30 serving and what showed up was, you know, we'll call it a 46 serving. It's different. And we also believe it could be potentially stolen products, right? Amazon, in that case, removes the seller from the listing, right? 30 minutes later, they're back on the listing with the same seller ID. Like you and I both know that should be impossible, right? Yeah. So we escalated with Amazon. And one of the cool things we learned is we learned some new escalation pathways with Amazon that I think very few people are aware of. But like Amazon takes this so seriously. There's entire teams dedicated to like fraud detection and prevention. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They actually have a team called the Bad Actor Disincentive Team. And I'll tell you, like, I don't normally talk like this, but like the bad team, the bad actor disincentives team, they're badass. Like these guys, we identified four accounts that they were using. We provide all this documentation. We anticipated what Amazon was going to ask. We put this all in a packet. We give it to Amazon with pictures of the location, walkthrough, all this stuff. And Amazon identified an additional half a dozen accounts that we didn't, beyond what we had found. And then coordinated a takedown within like 24 to 48 hours. And watching this, like at one point we had four teams internal at Amazon working on this. You're talking about, you know, I can only guess, but it seemed like there was 2 to 3 dozen people that were working on it. We had a single point of contact. You know, very quickly they concentrated a point of contact mm-hmm. into a single entity. But, you know, it was crazy. Like he would send an email saying the seller's been removed. And then they would get back on again. Like this happened multiple times in a day. And so it did take Amazon a couple steps to resolve the issue. But watching the speed that they operated at and watching like Dharmesh's, I think they roll up under Dharmesh Mehta, the VP of Worldwide Consumer Trust. You know, watching those teams operate was so impressive. I mean, if you want to buy legitimate product, buy it on Amazon because they take it more seriously than I think anybody else. And for an organization that large to move that fast, like you talk about Fast and the Furious semi-trucker edition, like they rolled through like the Rock and they just like that product might get sold somewhere else. It will not be sold on Amazon. We were able to get a grocery brand gated on those ASINs, which I've never heard of. Like, you know, to me, you can get brand gating, but it's in very specific categories like premium beauty, right? Where it's a brand like Burberry, right? Mm-hmm. Or a jewelry brand like Tiffany's or a cologne, you know, a famous cologne brand. I've never heard of them gating a grocery brand. And Amazon, you know, we were able to kind of, we obviously nudged them. But we were able to make a compelling case for why these ASINs should be gated, and Amazon agreed and took the rare step, ultra rare step of gating these grocery ASINs, which I think is so cool.
And, like, and for those guys that are, you know, may not know what that means, that gating, could you just clarify what that means?
It means Amazon's a marketplace built to put pressure on price. So, you know, Amazon on an everyday basis, they want everyone selling the same item because that'll put pressure on price, right? The only way to compete is on price. And so then guys start dropping price. What brand gating means is that no one else is allowed to sell that item except for the brand and Amazon. And so what it means is that you can trust that product is a legitimate product 100%. Brand gating is obviously insanely difficult to get. This brand moves you know, is the number one in this subcategory. I can't say what that subcategory is, but I will say it's in the grocery, overall grocery category. And so to have a top ASIN in a top subcategory be gated is I've never seen it happen. And we were able to get it. I'd say part of that was getting to the right resources, learning these new escalation pathways. For us, like, we're pro good guys. And so if other people can benefit, like when we looked at the assortment in the mix that these seller accounts were selling, right? We contacted one of the other brands. All I can say is it's a $1 billion brand. The parent company is publicly traded. I can't name it. Mm-hmm. but it's a household name. They had had 6 times more truckloads stolen than we had, which put the scale of it, like, to me, it was mind blowing. Mm-hmm. Because when you're dealing with a couple truckloads and it's $4 million, right? I don't know the dollar value on their truckloads, but they've been working on the problem for almost a year, and we cracked it in less than 2 weeks. Amazing. And we said, hey, like, we're not going to charge you for it. Like, if this information is beneficial to you. So, you know, it did cross state lines. So, you know, there may be multiple law enforcement agencies that get involved. I can't comment on that. We do know that, law enforcement did take some action, which they were really grateful for. Like, those guys deserve double whatever they're getting paid. And then Amazon, you know, the brands that were affected by this, when we looked at the other brands that were there, think like brands like Hanes and Neutrogena and Dove, Hoover Vacuums, right? Like, go on down the list. Like, there were things like kids' protein shakes in that mix. And one of the seller accounts that Amazon suspended had over $2 million in inventory at FBA. So when you think of the size and scale of it, it was crazy.
So the lesson learned is don't mess with Jed, the Jedi. You will get taken down. There is no messing with it. I have to say that there are few, if any, agencies out there that would go to this level, literally creating shutdowns massive where $1 billion companies have failed. Like, that's where you've been and that's where you're stepping into. And I just want to really congratulate you for this massive achievement of actually going and enforcing what is not just good practice in terms of service, but actually the law of the United States and what we stand for. Because here you're supposed to be able to have a business and have entrepreneurship and do this and do it the right way and not have these kind of issues occur. And what happens is when they're not investigated and not pushed and not pressured, it might just happen. So you stopped it. I mean, it's impressive.
Well, and I think, like, we anticipated what Amazon would take. I'd say the real credit goes to Amazon, their bad actor disincentives team, their customer fraud detective team. I mean, I can't say his last name, but I will say Mike from Amazon's fraud department deserves a raise. Ben from the bad actor disincentives team. That's, you know, I can't use their last names to protect confidentiality, but I can say, like, they were fantastic to work with. And all of our investigative homework would have been meaningless without, it's not what you say, it's what they do. We provided, like, hard evidence to Amazon. And the additional steps, like a law firm isn't going to, they're smart enough not to go walk through a warehouse of a place that, like, maybe someone could get shot. I mean, this is crazy.
Tell me what, okay, you have to say what you told me yesterday, which was you were talking called up a sheriff's office or something.
Well, so we initially called the local police department. I think we might have even called the wrong police department, but they literally said, we can't send our offices there. We might get shot. There's millions of dollars at stake. And we're like, guys, you're the police. Like, you have guns. Like, shoot back, you know? And then we got to the right police department. I will say, like, the Santa Ana Police Department is awesome. Like, they are fantastic. Like, they took it seriously. They took our homework. I can't comment because there's an active investigation that I do not want to interfere with. And I believe in due process and innocent until proven guilty. We did look, we did research individuals connected in this organized, organized
operation.
Organized operation. And some of the individuals were convicted of things like burglary four times. They had done between 15 and 25 years in prison. They owned $4 million houses. They owned $400,000 cars. And the smoking gun was they also owned a carrier company with one truck and one driver. So if anyone listening to this wants to know some carriers you probably should not use, feel free to contact us and we'll let you know.
So, but now here's a question though. Here's one thing though, because it does, they don't have to use that carrier to be victim to this, correct? You could be using a top carrier and it could be intercepted somehow. Someone bribing somebody and who knows what it is, but even if you don't use that carrier, the guy could still show up and be like, yo, here's,
we worry so much about just like generating revenue and generating EBITDA in business that I think sometimes some of the basic blocking and tackling gets overlooked. Like security isn't something you care about until you really care about it. Like Aaron, I think that $120,000 mistake, like if you can pass some lessons forward that will help someone else not have that same thing happen, like you now know there's a two-step process with FedEx and scanning and maybe that batch doesn't get sent on, right? One of the things I've learned is that when you become a billion-dollar brand or when you grow up and you're a half a billion-dollar brand or let's say you're even 50 million in sales, if when you get to the point where you're shipping containers, they should be GPS tracked, right? And you should have verification steps of every step along the way. Do not trust that a third party is going to have your best interests at heart. Like if that was your $4 million that was driving away, Aaron, I have a feeling that you probably know the guy's blood type, right?
I should. And that's I guess I should.
That's but a
I
joke. Mean,
clearly. Oh, you're a joke.
That's a joke.
I normally know nothing.
That's a
normally
joke.
Know nothing.
But you'll know, like you'll be much more careful because it's, you know, because you have a lot at stake. And I think one of the lessons here for us was when you get to scale, you would expect large organizations or large brands to have this all figured out. And I think this problem is on the rise. Like there was a Wall Street Journal article about how carrier theft, I want to say it's doubled or tripled in the last couple of years. And so this organized element, a couple of the other convictions that were associated with these individuals that, you know, we believe are affiliated, you know, they included things like, you know, possession of a firearm while being a convicted felon, you know, conviction for prostitution of a minor, which in my opinion is one of the worst possible things you could be convicted of. And to have those individuals at the epicenter of it, you know, they're hit a point where for our own safety, like, you know, I took down everything public about it because we had gone public about it before we realized the extent of the operation. And I took all of that down. And then you've noticed that I've been very careful not to identify the brands, not to interfere with an active law enforcement investigation. And then I was honestly floored. I didn't even know these teams at Amazon existed. Like Dharmesh usually catches a ton of negative publicity, right? He's in a no-win position because he's the top guy protecting brands, protecting customers at the end of the day. And I was just really impressed at like how fast Amazon moved, how extensive the actual organized operation was. And then when you looked at the amount of volume here, right? Like you think about how you felt about losing 120 grand. You know, our efforts, our homework in conjunction with Amazon's, Amazon shut down $50 to $100 million operation of which they would have been a large beneficiary. And so it was so cool to see a brand or to see a platform like Amazon do the right thing and not care about the money, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you and I were going to lose $50 to $100 million in business, I feel like we would have a little bit of a moral dilemma of like, okay, honey, I think I have hard evidence that this, but you know, maybe we're not sure. No, Amazon without question, like they did the right thing. They did it really fast. They could have dragged their feet on it, you know, made a few more, you know, made some more sales. And obviously they're large enough that they don't care, right? 50 to 100 million is a drop in the bucket for them. But I have to believe at some level, the fact that those teams are empowered to take that kind of action that quick against what is potentially goods of a questionable origin, you know, and to shut
down. Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I don't think that, I mean, again, if it was in a retail store, if it was anywhere else, like that speed would not have occurred for sure. I mean, that's without a doubt. We live in an age where we can be that fast, which is amazing.
Well, I think like Amazon, you know, like Amazon says they'll do the right thing. Like it was really cool to see that in action where like they really do care about customers. And for me, to have them take the unusual action of gating one of our brands in the grocery category, like that, to my knowledge, that may have happened before, but I've never heard of it or seen it. Right.
Yep.
I'm sure it probably has happened, but for them to take that rare step of gating those ASINs and then for that gating to stick is really cool.
No, that's incredible. And so how much, what dollar value do you think of stolen or maybe not by that person, but that these contraband goods have appeared into one location that's basically being sold, in your words from the past, by the mafia?
So we identified two locations, right? And potentially a third. And so to have, like, to think of it as like an, like it's an enterprise, it's a business, right? And I think that because I spend, you know, my time on the White Hat side of the line, I'm not in law enforcement. I'm not in the criminal justice system. I don't spend all my time looking at like criminal behavior. And I'm not saying that this is, I'm just saying that this was definitely like action that Amazon took against goods of a questionable origin, right? So like we can say for certainty, these stolen goods showed up here. How they got there, I don't know. But to see like the scale of it, like you would think, like when we looked up, one of the seller accounts was registered to an individual's like home address, right? So when their seller accounts started getting impacted, you could see like the you could see these really credible long-term accounts like that normally enforcement action against would be really difficult. You could see them kind of come to the forefront. And one of them was like a really nice house with a pool in a backyard. Like to go from getting out of prison and a few years later have a $4 million residence, right? And then like to see the cars in the driveway, the cars in the parking lot at the warehouse, like the amount of money that's flowing through this enterprise, you know, it was pretty wild. Like, I don't think about that very often on a day-to-day basis. I don't encounter like these types of issues. And for us, in the 8-year history of Piranha, this is the largest enforcement action we've ever seen Amazon take. Mm-hmm. And they did it to protect, you know, $500 million and $1 billion brands. And we, you know, like I said, we did reach out to one other $1 billion brand and they confirmed the scale that they had also had stolen inventory matching a similar MO that, you know, the trucks were intercepted in transit, go missing. And just to see the scale of it, like these are, there is a mastermind behind it. I don't know that we got that far to like fully peel back all the layers of the onion, but we got far enough and deep enough into like the individuals associated with it. These are individuals with, you know, with the types of backgrounds that you would not want to normally associate with in business. And so I think one of the blessings of in business, if you associate with good people, karma is like a real thing. And so if you do good work, like we really try hard at Piranha to do a good job for our brands and clients. We don't normally go to these types of lengths, right? I don't know that we'll ever go to these types of lengths again. Like
hopefully you never have to.
Yeah, I highly do not recommend driving to a seller's address and walking through their warehouse, potentially, allegedly, to get pictures. Like I don't think that's a smart thing to do, truthfully. But it was a sort of thing where this just all kind of naturally happened. And at each step, we did what we thought was best. And there came a point where like we just put it in Amazon's hands and we put it in law enforcement's hands. And it's still ongoing, but it's really cool. The Amazon piece, they're gated, it's done. Like that brand, no one else can sell that brand on Amazon. There is no recall risk for the brand. There is no health and safety risk for consumers. And so if you're buying like that grocery item and you're mixing it with water and putting it in your body, you can sleep great at night knowing that like Amazon either got it from the brand or this inventory that they bought, right, themselves from the brand. They're the only two people allowed to sell that product. And so it was really cool to see, even when there's tens of millions of dollars at stake, to see a public company like Amazon do the right thing.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Okay. Now, if someone's listening to this, a big brand, medium brand of any sort, and they go, you know what? I want Jed to fight for me. I want my brand to blow up. I want to sell for tens of millions, hundreds of millions, $1 billion. Like, I need representation on Amazon. Like, how do they find you, and how would a brand work with you so you could help them on Amazon? I mean, that's what you primarily do. And what would be the steps for somebody?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, well, first thing is like, they're welcome to contact us on our website, right? Piranha, PIRAWNA.com. So we named it Piranha for two reasons. One is we're Amazon only focused, and two, like those little fish in the Amazon, we like to be hyper aggressive. And so nobody knew how to spell Piranha. So we took the raw from Rawson and we dropped it in. And so PIRAWNA.com. And so they're also welcome to contact me specifically, JED@Piranha.com, JED@Piranha.com. I probably should create a Jedi email address after this. And I would say also, I'm a huge fan of people not profiteering off of situations. And so if you've been the victim of like container theft, if you've had stolen inventory or stolen goods, and some of our homework can benefit you, like we shared it with a billion-dollar brand for free on a confidential basis, we would do the same for you. So if you know someone at like a Neutrogena, Dove, a Hanes, a PlayStation, right, a Hoover, a Shark, vacuums, any of those kind of brands, like feel free to like forward this to them.
Basically, any brand that's over, anybody who's doing over, I don't know, 500 million could be, you know, I don't know.
I would say like part of it was half luck because, you know, they happened to steal a retail exclusive item, which we then were able to definitively trace. We happened to be close to that location, right? So we could then get some additional verification. And then we did follow all of the proper steps to, like I said, we learned some new escalation pathways with Amazon. And if another brand can benefit from that, like there is a conversation of full channel management. Like you need inventory forecasting, PPC management, best in class, like DSP and programmatic bidding. Like we kick ass at Amazon. Like I love to bid on the branded traffic of competitors and redirect that to your own listings. And that's a conversation for another time. One day we might be good enough to get the milk frother king of Amazon's business, but that wasn't the point of this podcast. I would say ever since I became aware of you, Aaron, I always look at your content as like best in class. Like whatever Aaron's doing is a 100% white hat and compliant with Amazon, and two is really, really smart, right? And the milk frother space has gotten more competitive and you're launching other products. I love the Shark Tank thing you were telling me about earlier, and maybe that's public info, maybe not.
Yeah, that is public info. I mean, basically just all the pitches and what we do in the future, it gets pitched to me, my wife, and our COO, we're like the sharks. And the guys come and say, we want this product. This is what we're excited. And they do the whole pitch. And we go like, rejected. What are you thinking? Or we say like, yeah, that's amazing. Or we add a little twist. And so we do that internally as like, it's actually an excitement to add the products. How do we make this product better? Because your product that you were selling last year will never be the bestseller forever. It's just not going to happen. You need to innovate and improve your product. So.
Well, and what's really cool, and I think you'll probably feel this, is there's an element of giving back. So like when you've been successful as an entrepreneur, we sold part of Piranha a couple years ago for millions of dollars, doubled down strategy. We've tripled since then. And so it's gone really, really, really well. And I would say one of the things we learned from that private equity transaction is you want to pick really patient and really operator friendly partners. We have, and we couldn't be happier with them. But also when people are pitching new ideas, we've actually done the same thing. Like we just launched a refund tool called Refund Hawk. In the first 4.5 months, it got back $1 million for clients. Like I had no idea that Amazon, that there was that kind of potential to get money back from Amazon, right? Like I thought it was nickels and dimes, but we filed 6,800 cases. We got back $1 million for clients, no charge. It's a 20% commission of whatever we recover, right? And like for a business, you know this, a normal business to get off the ground, for it to clear a couple hundred grand in its first, you know, 4.5 months in existence is really cool. We've been operating that for a couple quarters now. It was in stealth mode. Like I didn't do one external post about it, right? And this is actually the first time I've talked publicly about it. We also launched a TikTok division. We're calling that Uptick with 2 Ks. That's been in beta mode. And that's really interesting. Like we have a close friend who on TikTok shop, they're doing 200 grand a day. And we're watching billion-dollar brands and some of these $500 million brands and what they're doing. I know the numbers are mind blowing. There's an energy drink company that did more than 10 million in a month on TikTok shop a couple months ago. And we're watching, you know, in Q1, it went from 200 grand a day in wow. Q4. They're kind of a Q4 brand to 30 grand a day.
Yep.
But we're watching the TikTok playbook of like some of these influencer strategies that worked for Meta and how some cutting edge brands are applying them for TikTok. And I think TikTok is fairly new. So we've been really upfront. It's a beta. We're still figuring some of it out. But, you know, hey, like we've historically been Amazon only. We bolted on some Walmart because we have to. And I think Walmart has the money that, you know, it's still a relevant marketplace in the US from a .com perspective, especially from a brick and mortar standpoint. Mm-hmm. That's usually the primary focus. But the refunds business, right? And I have mad respect for our other friends in the space. Like I think when you look at like a Getida or you look at like a Three Colts, I think they're best in class, right? Like one day we want to be as best in class as those guys. But for us, it just came out of like, hey, we want to do a good job for our clients. And I think that's what drove this was, you know, whether it's Fast and the Furious semi-trucker edition, you know, and convincing Amazon like The Rock to roll through and just, you know, do the right thing and lay the law down. Or, hey, we want to like, you know, be efficient with marketing capital. I think we've just learned principles that help us in business. I think for you, the cool thing is to see you get to a certain point where you just want to give back and give other people opportunities. And now to me, I want to have the most pro entrepreneurship friendly workplace ever. Like you have a side hustle, no problem. Just disclose it. You That's want right. an idea? Great. Pitch it. We'll fund it. Right.
I love that.
And you
I love
can have, and I just think I love what you're doing. I think it's so cool. And awesome. Not a lot of people are talking about it. Most of the people that talk like this aren't doing it.
No, it's
and
true.
It's like
100%, 100%.
You know,
I agree.
It's rare to find the type of content where the people actually doing it are also talking about it. I think of like Reid Hoffman, Masters of Scale, right? Tim Ferriss, right? The Tim Ferriss podcast or Joe Rogan. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if your podcast is like, you know, one of the top 10. Or top 100, like I really have a lot of respect for Scott Needham and what he did with smartest seller in the room.
It's amazing. Yeah, so, I've been on there twice. It's a great podcast. They're a top 1% podcast. We're still top 5%, which is kind of lame, but we'll get there. And anyway, so
really if this helps you get there, I hope this helps you get there. I hope it was interesting. And I would say just in closing, like if our homework can benefit anyone else. If you like, feel free to shoot us a ping. We've got a mastermind group called Trillion Dollar Seller. It's free to join it. You can hop in. We share ideas like this all the time. And the goal was just to get some other Amazon masterminds together and swap good ideas. And, you know, it's a closed group so that you can be a little more free with what you share. But I hope some of this was beneficial for people out there.
I think so. I think so. And the truth is like this stuff happens. It's part of life, but it's good that out of all the marketplaces we've ever been on, Amazon is the best when you give them all the relevant information and they can identify, hey, someone made a mistake one time, there's a warning, you switch it and you're good. Like people can change, businesses can change, right? Did we do giveaways in 2018? Sure, we did. Okay, Amazon, as soon as Amazon said, yo, you can't do that, we're like, okay, never again. You know what I mean? It's like, it's easy. And they know that you rely on them and they rely on us. And so, you know, we work together. And I've had other marketplaces where it's not that way, where they don't care really.
If I was to sum it up in two words, it's synergistic genius. Like if people don't know what to do for a career path, pick Amazon, pick e-commerce. Like your career path and mine is predicated on the belief that people will click and buy more stuff in the future. And when they do that, they're going to want to return it no matter what. And right now that's Amazon. And every decade, okay, a new retailer or e-tailer comes along. Like it was Walmart in the late 90s, eBay in the early 2000s. It's Amazon right now. Maybe in 2030s, it's the Chinese and it's Shein or Taobao or, you know, something else, Temu. But I think what's cool is like the blessings it's afforded, the way it's impacted your life and my life. I'm just so grateful for it. Like, and I hope it continues to be a marketplace where they always do the right thing. They take quick action when they need to protect customers and brands. But it's a fantastic career trajectory. If you want to look 5-10 years ahead and say, hey, are those people that we want to be like, Aaron, one day I want to get on your level. I don't know that we're there yet, but I would
You're pretty close, dude. You're pretty close. I have to say, I mean, pretty close.
One friend. Of my favorite principles in business is let's be friends, let's be allies. So anyone listening to this podcast, if we can help you out, let's be friends, let's be allies. And, I think this concludes the Fast and the Furious semi-trucker edition of the Aaron Cordova show, unless you have any other questions.
No, that's it, man. Peace out, everybody, guys.
Jed Rawson, CEO of Piranha.
There you go. Boom.
Take care. Good luck. Bye. Be safe out there in the marketplace. Yeah. Good luck in the jungle.